Well, some of you may know this, but although I spent much of my early childhood in Texas, I actually moved around quite a bit over the course of my life. I've lived in Iowa, in Colorado, in New Jersey, in Virginia. I've got family in Mississippi. And since Allison went to grad school at Duke, I have a certain fondness for North Carolina as well. And so even as a young kid, when I was growing up, whenever we moved to a new state or a new town, I was always really fascinated by the different ways that people in different regions across the country talk, or different local customs that change depending upon what region you're in. For instance, there's a bunch of us gathered here in the room. Thinking about your childhood, if you were in a room with a lot of people and you wanted to address everyone at once, would you use you all, you guys, or y'all? Right? I'm a y'all kind of person. At Thanksgiving this year, will you have a slice of pecan pie or pecan pie? Serious question. If it's a really fancy pecan pie, it may have some caramel on it or some caramel, depending upon what side of the Mississippi you're eating it. One of my favorites was to watch people order soft drinks at restaurants. Right? This is my favorite. So in the Northeast, a waiter might come up and ask if you want a soda. If you're in the Midwest, do you want pop? And in the Deep South, we're all about brand loyalty. So the conversation goes, do you want a Coke? Sure, what kind? I'll have a Dr. Pepper, right? That's how it works. I'm not even, I even got to start to talk about a barbecue, which as a Texan, I believe that if brisket or ribs is to have a sauce, then it should be spicy and tangy, a tomato base, and maybe just a little sweetness to it. And why on earth anyone would have a vinegar-based barbecue sauce is beyond me. And those people who are scowling at me right now are from North Carolina. Okay? This is the truth. Growing up working cattle, I'm just now coming to the point where I think that vegetarians are trustworthy people. I'm kidding, I still don't trust them, but it's growing, right? It's fun to laugh at ourselves and take note of these odd little idiosyncrasies about ourselves, things that for most of our childhoods, until we begin to encounter people from other parts of the world, we assume that everyone says y'all and Coke and has a certain way of doing barbecue or have the ways in which we do family dinners Christmas. But unfortunately, for Paul and the first church in Rome, they had differences that they weren't able to laugh at as easily as you and I are. A church in Rome was a diverse collection of people from all walks of life. When they sat down for worship, wealthy business leaders and community leaders sat on the same row with household servants, with blue-collar workers, with people coming in because it was a warm place on a Sunday morning. Worship brought together people from different backgrounds and beliefs. They spoke different languages at home. They had their own pet peeves about how barbecue should be cooked. The church was filled with people learning for the first time what it meant to follow Jesus. And each group brought their own perspective about the best way to do that. Some church members had grown up in Jewish households. They understood Jesus' ministry to be a continuation of everything that God had been up to in the Bible since Genesis. Other church members, They grew up in pagan temples and houses of worship in other parts of the Roman Empire. They found comfort in the gospel's message of what God was doing for all people, everywhere, no matter what their background. And so one of the first debates that opened up in the church had to do with food, with eating, with dietary customs. Jewish Christians grew up preparing food in special ways and paying attention to what they ate as a sign of obedience to God. When Jews went to a Roman marketplace to do their grocery shopping, they had to make sure to buy only kosher foods, foods that adhered to dietary laws. And you had to be careful because many of the vendors in a Roman marketplace were actually selling meat that had been used in a religious service in the temple. Because in Rome, many worshipers, their form of generosity didn't come much like ours today, where we put money in the offering plate or we give online. When someone was generous in a Roman temple, many times they brought livestock or grain from a harvest in their fields. A small portion of a cow or lamb was used for the religious ceremony, the sacrifice, and then a second portion went for the temple priests to eat as their compensation. And then oftentimes a large third portion was used to sell in the marketplace to generate income for the temple, or it was used at a large feast or gathering. And so, Jews did not want to buy meat that had been sacrificed to idols because what they were doing was financially funding the worship of other gods in the city. And when they became Christians, many converts continued to practice the dietary laws they grew up with, they were familiar with at home. But apparently, as we entered into our reading today, we find that there's a group of converts who've decided to take this practice one step further. They believe that it was better to stop eating meat altogether than to risk, even by accident, purchasing some meat that was used in a pagan temple. They encouraged other church members to do the same. But for the other group of Christian converts coming from pagan backgrounds, they really didn't see what the big deal was, whether you ate kosher or non-kosher food. They assumed that almost everything you bought in the marketplace had at some point been used in somebody's temple. And since they had come to see that these gods were fake anyways, who cared if your butcher had his shop in the temple or if it was a standalone tent? Who cared what incantation he recited over it, as long as you weren't participating in the worship yourself, as long as you understood that this wasn't part of our faith and practice? A steak is just a steak, after all. And even though he was Jewish, Paul had come to believe that there was no longer any food taboos in the kingdom of God. You don't need to worry about whether your food is kosher or not kosher in the same way that you shouldn't worry about whether a person is a Jew or a Gentile. Everyone and everything is embraced by God's love. At the same time, Paul wants to make room in the church for people to decide for themselves whether it will remain meaningful to their faith to practice the dietary laws of their childhood, or whether it's time for them to embrace new ways of doing things. He doesn't really see this as an essential matter of faith and practice. If you're comfortable eating meat from the marketplace, terrific. If you're not comfortable eating meat from the marketplace, wonderful. In many ways, it's not what we eat that makes us good or bad. It's how we behave afterwards. Paul's main issue here is not what people are consuming around the dinner table. It's the kind of attitudes that they're beginning to feast on. A certain level of contempt has snuck into the church between these two groups. That kind of contempt that you have when you are late to a meeting and you're on 66 and you get stuck behind a new driver who's a little too timid, right? Going just under the speed limit and you're thinking, oh my goodness, if everyone drives like you, this is why 66 is a mess. Now, your language might be a bit more colorful, but we're in church. Paul understands that at times we can get this way even in our communities of faith. It may not be the speed limit, but there is this perennial issue in churches where one group has a way of thinking or living and begins to decide that this is the way that everyone should be doing it. But this is not what the church is about for Paul. Church is not a place for you to come to feel more guilty or more ashamed of who you are. If you leave worship from here feeling worse about yourself than when you entered, we've done a very bad job at worshiping God. But so often, we set these expectations, even if it's not a church, even just for ourselves, we set these unrealistic expectations about what it means to be a good Christian. If we're not praying for 3 hours straight a day, if we don't read the Bible at every meal, if we don't volunteer for 5 mission projects, if we're not in the process to become a deacon, we just might not be cut out for this. For those of you who are parents, you feel this pressure differently. You're trying to make sure that you're doing the right thing for your kids. You want them to grow up and have a meaningful faith that's all their own, to be a part of a caring community, to discover who God has called them to be. And these are wonderful dreams, but it's very easy to feel ill-equipped to do that. Especially when you're 3 minutes away from school and you haven't finished your coffee and all of a sudden that child that you love so much decides to ask you what God looks like or where heaven is located or why war exists and you think, I am not prepared to answer this. And quickly it's, God love you and, oh great, we're here at school. Let's go see Miss Johnson, right? Are you a bad Christian if you can't just rattle off those answers off the top of your head? You need to spend more time in deep meditation. Paul knows that for those of us who want a meaningful faith, most of the time we don't feel like we have it all together. And that's okay. Last thing we need is to enter another space that makes us feel ill-equipped. Now, to be fair, Paul doesn't think the church is a place where anything goes and just forget about it and enjoy your life. We're all trying to live lives that look like the way Jesus lived his. There are some standards, some ways in which we should call ourselves to be, but maybe it's not about the food that we eat or the clothes that we wear. Following Jesus is a little bit more than that. Just before our reading for today, in chapter 13, Paul repeats Jesus' standard for the Christian life. Love one another. Paul says that if you took every commandment in the Bible, every lesson that is shared, and you had to sum it up in one single standard by which to live your life, it would be love others. See, for Paul, it's not a question about whether or not it's permissible to eat non-kosher meat. It's not about whether or not it's better for you just to abstain from it altogether. He's not concerned about whether you always listen to Christian radio, and if you can name five Christian artists right now, or secretly you like Lynyrd Skynyrd or Beyonce. Paul's not upset if every book on your book list wasn't written by a pastor. And it's okay that over the summer on vacation, you slept in once on a Sunday. Right? The central questions of our faith are not about meeting quotas, but making sure we've been at enough Bible studies or retreats this year. It's not even about how well we have avoided sin or kept our reputations clean and spotless. There are two questions that are central to the Christian life for Paul. The first is, did I receive and accept the love of God today? Did I just accept the fact that I am accepted by God? That's the first question. And the second is, did I share the love of God with someone else? Pretty simple. It may not be easy, but it is simple. Accepting God's love and sharing it, that's the true standard of whether or not you are following Jesus. We wake up every morning simply trying to live and love like Jesus as best we can. And to be church simply means to be a community of faith that is trying together and supporting one another to live lives like that. That's the core of everything we do as a church. If you had to sum up to someone, what is a church? What does a church do? We're a community of people that receives God's love for us, and we share it with others. We provide Bible studies. We create opportunities for small groups, for mission projects, not because I want to make sure that you check off another box on some cosmic to-do list, right? Many of you have to-do lists far too long for that. You can't even keep track of the ones you have, much less ones I would give to you. But these opportunities, it's not about duty or obligation or things that you have to do. We're trying to create spaces for you to be able to grow into the person God has called you to be. We encourage you to come to worship, to get involved in a small group, because it's those spaces where you can learn who God is, what God is up to in the world, and what your role is in all of that. We create relationships amongst one another and in our community, because we think it's in relationship with each other that we learn to work out what it looks like to practice Jesus' love. It's really tough to learn what love looks like on your own. There's no app for that. Something that gets worked out with others. That's what our missions fair is about today. It's about giving you an opportunity to find inspiration, to discover a place to say, this is where I might feel called to share God's love with someone else. And perhaps in that process, to receive it myself. Jesus said that he called us to life and life to the full. To experience joy, to have hope, to know what forgiveness and grace feels like. That's the Christian life. Everything else is just commentary. So this week, my challenge for you is to take some time every day. Maybe this is a good conversation around the dinner table. Maybe it's something you just want to do before you go to sleep. But ask yourself these two questions that Paul has. Where in the course of my day did I experience God's love for me? Where did I take notice of it? And then the second is, where in the course of my day, maybe it was a big moment, maybe it was just something small, where did I share God's love with someone else? It could be as simple as a smile or a card. It could be as big as giving up your day to help someone. It's a good conversation to have with someone else. Where did you receive and where did you share love today? For in the end, if there is any standard to be used, any marker of what it means, it is to be the kind of people who live and love for the sake of the world, who exist to see ourselves as God sees us, and to help others to do the same in all the world. May we be those kind of people today. Amen.